20% of people will love you. 20% of people will hate you. And the rest are completely indifferent.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Malika Dudley. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Malika. One, she is a multi-award-winning journalist, and that includes two Emmy nominations, a mural, and multiple SPJ. And you're going to have to tell us about what that is, an SPJ. Two, she is a communications scholar. She actually studied it at university. And three, she's deathly afraid of danger, yet she has been a stunt double on Hawaii Five-0, Entourage, and for the movie You May Not Kiss the Bride. Malika Dudley, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Delighted to be talking with you and reaching out to you in Hawaii, because I imagine the weather is a lot warmer than it is here, because it's well below freezing here.
Oh, yes, it is definitely a lot warmer. For us, though, it's a little cold. We are at, I don't know if you guys do Celsius or Fahrenheit, but here it was 51 degrees earlier this morning. So for us, that's really cold.
Okay. Yes. And right now, 51 degrees Fahrenheit would be very warm for this time of year. So we're running actually probably pretty close to zero Fahrenheit right now.
Oh, so, my gosh.
Yeah. And I actually went out for a very short run this morning.
That is inspiring.
Well, we learn how to layer up here. Lots of layers, and you don't run too fast because you don't want to breathe too hard. Malika, tell us, just, I'm curious, what's a mural?
So an Edward Murrow Award is a highly sought after journalism award. So every year, just like the Emmys, the Murrow Awards come up, and yeah, it's a huge honor.
And the SPJ.
SPJ stands for the Society of Professional Journalists, and there's a chapter in every single state. And so every year what ends up happening, and it's kind of just like the Emmys and the Murrows actually, where our peers are the ones that judge us. And so, for example, I think last year the Louisiana chapter was the one that judged the Hawaii chapter's submissions. So we'll see what happens this year. And yeah.
You have been a TV journalist reporting the news and weather, and from those, you've learned some lessons, valuable lessons, well, how to come across on TV. However, I believe there's a lot of similarities between being on television and being on Zoom or Teams or any other virtual type environment. What are some of the similarities and lessons that you've noticed that people could take from television?
Well, for example, one of the most glaring similarities is that you are talking into a camera. And you can make it even more so that you're talking into a camera. For example, right now, I'm not even looking at you. I'm looking into the lens of my camera, which is a few inches above my screen. And so every now and then I might look down at you just to see if you're, because you're my audience member, right? To see what's the reaction, or maybe someone looks confused or whatever that is. So that is a difference where I can actually get some kind of feedback from my Zoom. But if you're really trying to connect with your audience, you have to do all the things that you would do in person, right? So making eye contact is really important. And when we're in the studio, or actually because of COVID, I do my weather right here on my porch, but it's still just a screen. And I don't look at, I have an iPad actually, which I look into, or that's my screen, if you will, for when I go live remotely from my home to do weather for the ABC affiliate here, KITV 4 News. And I don't look at myself. I look at where the screen is, which is oddly with an iPad to the right-hand corner in the middle. And you can tell if I watch myself back later, I can tell when I forgot to look into the lens and when I'm looking at myself instead. But it's a natural inclination to look at a face. And so that's probably one of my biggest tips would be to look at the lens of the camera instead of the face, because then you will be connecting with your audience more. So you need to sacrifice a little bit yourself, because for you, it's nice to have that connection and look at the faces that you're looking at. But my recommendation would be to at least go back and forth if you can. But there are tons of lessons when I'm live in a studio or just on camera anywhere, even if it's what we call a look live. So people do this all the time now because we have social media. You're looking into your phone. And so when we do that, the number one thing is to be yourself. I mean, that's what people really connect with. And that's probably my biggest takeaway, is to just lean in to who I am and stop caring about, you know, what this person or that person might think or say or whatever. Because once you do that, you start to get into your head, and then you're more likely to not perform in the way that you would like to.
Now, Malika, that's an interesting point, because I know many people, when they're presenting virtually, they want to see the faces, and they end up looking at the faces instead of looking into the camera. However, if they see the faces and they don't like the reaction they're getting, they internalize that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I think everyone can relate to that, right? And what's awful about Zoom is that people are not good audience members. So maybe one thing for our audience members is that when you are attending a Zoom, make sure that you're doing the same things that you would do in person. You know, you don't want to look bored, or maybe someone could be reacting to they're looking at their phone and they get some kind of a whatever on their phone. And so they have this weird look on their face. You would never know, because you have no idea what's happening in their room, right? So it's very different than in person, where I can tell when someone's checked out and they're looking at their phone, maybe they're reacting to their phone, or if I have everyone's engagement, you know. And so as an audience member, it's really important to nod your head and smile, use those facial expressions to really give encouragement to your speaker. And then, yes, as the speaker, you kind of have to take it all with a grain of salt. And in fact, when I do speeches that are online, or if I have a presentation, I actually will put my notes up on top, like in my screen. So I won't be able to actually see faces. And, my dad always told me that you need to practice until it looks like you never practiced a day in your life. And so I like to be very prepared. I have my bullet points, or if I'm the interviewer, I've got my questions all written out and I have potential answers. And so I also have my own podcast. It's called the Communification Podcast, where I interview experts about communication topics that they research or they teach about. And then I have a guest on the pod and we basically break down those lessons and try to apply them to our own lives and tell our own authentic stories about navigating through whatever that is. Let's say it's deception. And so I'll have on my screen all of the questions that I'm going to ask. But if the conversation, you know, you have to know that that's how conversations go, that sometimes they don't go the way that you plan them to. I mean, the other person has their own, you know, agenda, brain will go wherever they go. You're trying to flow, right? So you need to allow for the flow. And then I'll write like, okay, well, she might say this. And so here's another thing I could say, or here's this bit of research that I could pop up. And so I scroll through to get to that part where I can kind of still be listening. It's all about multitasking. Still listen to what the person is saying, because you need to respond to what the person is saying clearly. But also have those notes in front of me so that I can kind of go back and forth and sound really educated. And then it kind of helps that I don't really see their face. But I think it's, you know, there are levels. And so if you're just starting out on Zoom, you probably need to work your way up to that. And another thing about Zoom that's great about seeing someone's face, though, is that you know when it's your turn. And so there's these turn-taking behaviors. So this is different from a speech, right? In a speech, it's just one way. So it's really easy to just kind of have your notes up and just continue to go down. And hopefully you've practiced until it looks like you never practiced a day in your life. And at the end, you might get a round of applause. You know, it's very strange when you give a speech on Zoom, because even at the end of your speech, you're like, I have no idea how that went. Wonderful. Hopefully the chat box starts lighting up with great job. But the faces, it's so interesting. But if it's an interview where you're going back and forth, you know, that's very different. So, you know, it's good to kind of keep that in mind.
Now that's curious there. So when you are interviewing, you're not looking at the person. You have text on the screen so that and you can scroll up and down to think, oh, they said that. That reminds me of the research I did, and I want to make sure I get it right. So you've got your text in front of you, and now you're juggling what you heard, and you're searching for that piece of information, and then you're keeping the conversation going forward. When you are talking to the camera, and this is still difficult for me to talk into, and I'm doing it right now, so I'm looking into that glass eye, which is cold. It just sucks the life out of you. How do you talk to that camera as if it was a person? What do you do?
Maybe it just takes practice, but I know that I'm talking to you, and I can actually, through my peripheral vision, I can see you nodding. And so that helps me with knowing that you're listening, and I smile. I just know it. We're growing up with this technology. It's evolving as we get older. And so I think it might be something that's a little bit easier for our younger generations. You know, I'm an older millennial, so I kind of had a little bit of this when I was in college, and then kind of had to learn about it along with everyone else as, you know, it continued to evolve. But it's not that difficult for me. And then also I am in the industry. And so I have to look into a glass eye all the time. Sometimes it has words on it. Sometimes it's me backwards, right? Because I'm a meteorologist, and that's how the weather wall works. So it gets to this point where you just have to imagine, you know, the people that are there behind the lens. Sometimes I like to not imagine the people. A lot of people, that's their number one fear. That is the number one fear in the world, is public speaking. So it might actually help some people to have your notes on the screen and just talk into the camera. You know, I don't need those turn-taking cues of, you know, oh, this person looks like they want to say something, or maybe I should wrap up because I have anxiety, or have a, you know, this fear that I need to get over. And so for some people might be great. I mean, when I'm out in the field, I'm more concerned about the people that are walking around and that might be looking at me while I'm speaking into the camera, where later, or if it's live right at that moment, potentially hundreds of thousands of people are watching, you know, but I'm more concerned about the fact that that person is crossing the street and they're looking at me.
Now that's a different challenge there. When you are broadcasting from in the street, you've got to make the camera, the viewers, believe that you're talking to them and only to them. And at the same time, you've got to ignore what's happening around you, even though you're wondering, well, that person's acting kind of weird there. I don't like the way they're looking at me. How do you overcome that, those distractions and possible threats?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I guess you just do it, you know? I mean, like most things in life, especially when it's out in the field and it's my job. So it's a lot easier to do when it's not something that's just, oh, well, I decided to do this. This is my little thing, you know, because then I could just decide not to do it. But when you're kind of forced in that situation to turn it on, just kind of have to do it. There have been, there are loads of viral videos online showing reporters that were not able to do that. And I've had my own moments as well. You know, I mean, I remember there was this one time that, and this was very early in my career, you know, I was in my mid-20s. And like I said, the camera that I'm looking into is backwards. And so if I put my right hand out, it looks like my left hand is going out. And fortunately, I'm dyslexic when it comes to left and right. So it actually just looks normal to me. But one day I thought it was backwards from backwards, if that makes any sense. And I was so early in my career that I didn't have the wherewithal, or, you know, it just never occurred to me that I could just step off screen if I was confused and continue to give my weather report. Instead, I stood on camera and looked really confused. And at this point, early in my career, my parents would call me after every newscast and they would tell me what a great job I did. And my parents called me and they went, "What happened?" I thought the camera was backwards from backwards. I mean, they went, they checked everything. There was nothing wrong. It was literally my brain just decided to, I guess, maybe work. And it was very confusing. So, you know, we definitely have those moments. And one thing that television news has definitely taught me, you know, there are so many newscasts in a day. And now it's a little bit different because of social media and the fact that, you know, these clips can live on after they go live. But the majority of the time, it's live. Once it goes live, it's gone. And you can just move on from there. And I feel like that's an analogy for life, that, you know, when we make mistakes, when we falter, when we fail, those are all learning moments. And in that next step, that next choice is the one that matters. And your mistakes and your failures are not who you are. They are something that happened, hopefully something you learned from and grew from, and then you can move forward from there. And to not hold on to that and internalize that experience as something that has to do with the person that you are.
When you're presenting on camera, and when you started presenting as a TV journalist, I imagine one of the challenge was that how do you put out enough energy without looking over the top?
You know, it's a gentle balance. And I know I said earlier, don't care about what other people think and say, but there's a balance there as well, right? And so if you have mentors in your industry, if there is someone that captivates you in whatever field you're in, so, you know, this is your intended message, right? So what is your intended message? And find your mentor within that field and see what they do. If you can, get that person to consult you, you know? And when I first started, I was forced into this, you know, again, I was in my mid-20s and my news director would have me sit with the main anchor or the chief meteorologist and show them my tapes. And then they would critique my tapes. And that was a very humbling process. It was a process that definitely helped me a lot with the way that I present. And I was given the opportunity, which is very rare now in this industry, I was given the opportunity to try it again and try it again and try it again and not on air. You know, these were recorded between the newscasts. This was my practice. And I was, you know, practice makes progress. And I was able to progress. And I think, you know, now 15, 16 years later, I can do this in my sleep, you know, and it really is just a matter of doing. The more you do, the better you get at it, and where you can really strike that balance. And you know what? Also, though, you got to remember that I can't remember where this came from, but someone once told me 20% of people will love you, 20% of people will hate you, and the rest are completely indifferent. And so you got to know too that when you put yourself out there, when you speak your intended message in whatever form that takes, I mean, George, you just got to be okay with the fact that sometimes people are just not going to like you, even if you feel within yourself that this is your perfect balance of who you are and the amount of energy that you want to give out. You know, this very podcast, someone might watch it and go, oh my gosh, that girl has way too much energy, you know, and someone else might say, oh, I love her energy. She just energized me. I want to be more like that, you know, and someone else might be like, yeah, she's okay. And that is absolutely a fact. And I just have to be okay with that. And we all have to be okay with that.
And that's a good reminder for probably everything in life, that not everyone's going to love us. A few might, and maybe they're strange. A few are going to hate us. And maybe it's those people who are kind of in the middle. Those are the people that maybe give a true indication of how we're coming across or how we relate. And yeah, it's not about, and we get so seduced by social media into getting liked. Mm-hmm. What a mistake, hey? It's not about being liked, it's about getting the message across. And they say that public speaking is the greatest fear that we have, or the most common fear anyways. It's certainly, you know, what's there to be afraid of? It's not like you're going to die, but people still are nervous about public speaking. And I imagine speaking on camera is even more scary. How did you face fears when you spoke on camera, and how did you overcome that? And do you ever have, and this is a three-part question, and do you ever have relapses where there's those moments where, oh, something went wrong?
Yeah, oh, for sure. So, okay, well, a lot of things popped into my head. So number one, I think I still get more nervous in person than I do on camera. There's just something about someone being in front of you. And that, you know, just like I said, when I'm out in the field and there's people walking around, right? It's kind of the same thing when I'm in a studio and there are people, you know, the anchors are at the desk, or when I'm on my porch and my mom and dad decide to look through the window at me, you know, in each of those moments, I have my anxiety goes up a little bit. And fortunately, I have enough years under my belt that for the most part, I'm able to kind of rein that in and just, you know, focus and get through those kind of moments. Early on in my career, they happen more often, that's for sure. And that is something to be expected. So if any of the listeners out there have anxiety, or, you know, you want people to hear your intended message, but you don't know how to get there because you feel like there's this huge block that how can you do this when you can't even speak at the dinner table in front of everyone, right? Just know that even the best speakers in the world at some point had some kind of anxiety, and that it does pop up in the weirdest times. I mean, for me, it's when I sing is when I'm most nervous. And sometimes I'm not nervous at all. And sometimes my body takes over. And there was this one time I was singing at, our governor was a Republican at the time, and I am a former Miss Hawaii, and our Miss Hawaiis were invited to the Republican convention, whatever. I have no idea. You know, I just showed up and we were supposed to perform. And I was asked to sing the national anthem. And I've done this, you know, I can't even tell you how many times I've sung the national anthem. I can do it in my sleep, right? And I get on stage, and it was this elevated stage. It was a ballroom. So everybody was on, you know, these like 10 person tables, and the governor was right beneath me with her entourage. And I start to sing and my body just starts shaking, and I'm pretty good at honing that anxiety in and turning it into, you know, like performance type of energy. But when your leg moves and you can't stop it, And that's also why I don't wear heels when I sing. I tend to wear flats, or sometimes I even do it barefoot when it's appropriate. And so I felt my leg shaking and I was like, okay, I hope nobody can see this. I got through the song, you know, everything was fine. Then later, my friend was sitting in the front row on one of those 10 person tables. And he goes, you did great. I was so nervous. And he goes, you know, I hear that because your dress was moving. And I thought there must be a draft in here. And then I realized it was your legs. So, I mean, it still happens. We've been in COVID now for almost 2 years. I haven't been in person. And so my first MC gig in person was really interesting. Fortunately, because of the Zoom events, you know, I do get some practice of at least being in front of people that I don't know, because I think that that's where the anxiety comes from, is that judgment, that fear of being judged. And so reminding myself, number one, that people want to see you succeed. You know, people don't enjoy being in an audience when someone like bombs and fails. And, you know, like, it makes people very uncomfortable. They want you to be amazing. That's why they're there. Why are they there to hear your message? They're there to hear your intended message, right? Like, so you need to believe that before you step on stage, before you go on camera, you need to believe that people have tuned in for a reason. So when people tune in to watch the news or the weather, they've tuned in because that is the content that they want. And so you just need to know that and believe that, you know, they don't want to see you like flubbing and tripping over your words. And so just feel comfortable in that.
Good advice. Malika, let's remind people about your podcast, the Communification. Communification, I'm guessing that's a word that you created. And what's the significance of that word? And why would people listen to the podcast? What will they get?
Yeah, sure. So I actually did a word search online, and this was a word in the Urban Dictionary. And so they combine communication with beautification. So it's the beautification of your communication. But also, the more I searched online, I found that some people use this word communification to describe the unification of community. And both of those things are the goals and the vision for my podcast. And so when you listen to the podcast, not only will it help you to unlock your communication potential by teaching you these tangible research-based communication strategies for navigating through things like apologizing, you know, when someone lies to you, or if you are being deceptive. My first season is about communication and technology. So a lot of things like cyberbullying and fubbing, which is phone snubbing. it's just a place for us to learn and grow. And then the opposite side of it is, I think people need to feel like they are not alone. They want to know that when they're struggling, and we all feel this way, we just think, oh my gosh, I'm the only one. I'm the failure. I'm the one that just sucks at this. But no, you are not alone. So many people struggle with the same issues. And so I have a guest on, usually it's some kind of a, you know, celebrity. Like my first episode was with the Bucket List family, who has 2.5 million followers on Instagram and all over the internet. They're very, very popular. And we talked about how social media, you know, impacts their communication. And so it's really great to kind of hear from these people that live this day in and day out. When you see that they struggle, I mean, this woman who has millions of followers is feeling depressed and judged and needs to take a break, then I think that makes us, you normal people, feel so much better when we go, oh, wow, I feel the same way, but I thought I was all alone. And look at this girl who's liked by millions of people and still feels the very same exact way, because guess what? We're all human.
And Malika, that's probably an important point when it comes to communication. We often think that communication is just all about providing information, but maybe the more important role of real communication is kind of opening up and saying, I've got struggles too, and let's talk about it. And maybe we can, by talking to each other, we can actually both move forward.
It's that authenticity. And that's what the beautiful thing about social media is. And, you know, we can cultivate our own little communities online. People have to choose to follow us, especially, you know, myself as a public figure, if you will. You know, that person had to tap a button and go, yeah, this is someone I'm interested in. I want to be a part of their life. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful place where it can be a beautiful place, which is what we call a mass personal platform. So we have mass media, you know, where we are speaking to the masses. That's what I do on television, right? There is interpersonal communication, which is generally between a small number of people, usually two, and we really get to connect. And with this mass personal platform, we get to do both, and we can use that for good, you know? And that's when I feel that I really connect with people. There was a hurricane bearing down on us a few years ago. It was Hurricane Lane, and everyone in Hawaii was just freaking out. And I was in France on a family reunion, but I started tracking it from the beginning. And it was so interesting to see how people responded, of course, to the fact that I was informing them, you know, and trying to help to keep them safe. But what they really responded to was the authenticity of being truly concerned about my family and friends, of not being able to quit because it's gonna make me cry, you know, because I don't know what's gonna happen. And I'm halfway across the world, but I have to keep updating you because I really care, and showing the behind the scenes moments and coming on camera, you know, and this is on social media, you know, not live on television. I probably would put some makeup on or something, but, you know, literally rolling out of bed with what I call my titta bun. So my followers started calling my updates my titta bun updates, like a mom bun, and rolling out of bed and just be like, okay, I just saw the update. Here it is, you know? And that's what they really responded to, was that openness and that authenticity.
Malika, in wrapping up, if there was one, two, or three pieces of advice that you could give to people for how to perhaps feel better and come across more real through social media, through virtual meetings and virtual presentations, what might be those one, two, or three pieces of advice?
Number one is practice makes progress. So just practice, you know, everyone gets better with time. number two would be to just get in touch with yourself, you know, identify your values. What is really important to you? How do you want to make an impact on the world? And if you come from that place, it will be seen as authentic and people will respond. And it's a really beautiful thing.
Fabulous advice. My guest today is Malika Dudley, reminding you to practice so much that it looks like you never practice a day in your life.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.